Hi everyone, thank you for coming to the session. We have Carlos talking about day-to-day with Cassandra and some of the weirdest and complex situations we found. Are you sure 1 hour is sufficient for this?
Yeah, I'm not going to talk about...
But you did say some of, not so, all of it.
All of it, yeah.
All right, take it away.
Thank you. So it's exactly, I'm not going to talk about all the cases. A couple of the ones, actually, the community helped a lot. So who am I? I'm a big data consultant, but I was Cassandra DBA for a long time. I just moved really recently to the big data team. I've always loved distributed systems, Cassandra MVP, been programming for a long time, and, well, I started Cassandra with 0.6 back in 2011. So what does Pitchin does? We do manage databases, clouds, and all that. It's mandatory marketing material. We have a lot of technical expertise on big data, database infrastructures, cloud, advanced analytics. The key thing here is normally people don't call us when things are running fine. So that's... normally when there's a fire is when we get called in, kind of database fire department. So the agenda for the talk, I'm going to talk the small introduction on how why we get into these things. And these are the problems I'm going to see. They've got a fancy name to not give it away. And then any questions you might have. So the first thing is we don't own any clusters. So we do manage services. We manage other companies' Cassandra clusters. And sometimes we don't have even visibility into the use case of these clusters. Some companies have multiple clusters that serve multiple purpose, multiple apps. Even the ownership inside the companies are kind of distributed. So we have a bit of detective work, figuring out what's going on with that, where are those clusters being used for. Well, SSH access, supposedly should always have. The reality is we don't really have that much. So over the shoulder sometimes is good, sometimes not even that. Sometimes it's just emails and tickets, and we have to go through whatever we find through those means. Also, sometimes, like, yeah, what queries are being used? What's the data model? And even those things sometimes don't reach us. So things get a bit tricky once you have to fight fires without actually getting to see the fire. And the thing is, this is not a me effort, this is a team effort. And not only the Cassandra team, but, well, SRE, sysadmins, the community, Cassandra community, networking, all those things. The DNS is always the problem. So it's although we do concentrate knowledge in teams, we are able to reach all the other teams in need. So this is the first problem. I had actually my first big fire when I joined the company. It was December 2015, just before Christmas, amazing. A customer signs on, says everything is fine. And then today, saying we have a small problem with our cluster. It's like, okay, actually I have SSH access to this one. So. The first thing I always did is no tool compaction stats, and well, that number was done there, like on all nodes, 9,000 plus compaction spanning. So yeah, it's not a small problem. It was a 6-node cluster running on AWS, spinning disks, 2 terabytes per node, really heavy IoT loads, early 2.0, just migrated from 1.2 recently. And some developer said, yeah, sometimes major compaction. I was like, okay, sometimes major compaction. On spinning disks with 2 terabytes of data. So I was looking at this. And of course, after the no tool compaction set, starting to figuring out everything else, huge GC pauses, terrible performance, dropping mutation, so data was probably not all data reaching. Compactions were permanent due to the nature of the disks. And due to the sometimes major compaction, some nodes was already living with 1 terabyte plus single SS table. This took me, and of course, like I said, it's a small problem. It's almost Christmas. They wanted this done fast. So I need capacity. That's the first thing. It's clear a lot of capacity. And I also need to get those compactions done. The compactions were just not due to the major compactions. There was actually normal pending compactions. The disks were full of files. So how do you approach these kind of problems? At the time, Cloudno was barely new. The customer was also cost. Really didn't want to raise the costs of the cluster, and it's like, yeah, we have to keep this running really cheap. It's like, okay, your data is growing and you want to keep this platform, like, I don't understand. So this was a discussion internally with some of the new cloud folks on the company, plus validating the idea with the community. I think Aaron at the time helped me a lot, Patrick as well, on all this approach works. That's the thing with Cassandra. You pick a Kennedy node, let's sacrifice this one, see if this works, and if this works, we go forward. So at that time, I2 instances were the first instance with SSDs. They were really, really expensive. But that's the only way out we found. So we R-synced the local slow HDDs to EBS. This took around 6-8 hours. We stopped the node. We are sync again the remaining flushes, and then we spin up the not I6 I2s, the I2s to SSDs, the EBS to the SSD. We start the node, and this will clear the compaction in under 1 hour. The speed of the SSDs will clear this out, and then we do this round robin for all the nodes, and then everything compaction-wise was clear. So it took 24 hours. Compactions were done, more or less. Some sanity was restored to the cluster. After that, we doubled the cluster size. This was single token, which is actually kind of good to duplicate the cluster. So the first day for compactions, the second day for duplicating the cluster, and this was non-stop, so it was a 2-day non-stop effort taking the cluster out of the fire. It was, the cluster is healthy at that moment, we are happy, just like on the 23rd or 24th of December during the morning, something like that, a bit burned out, but... But the SS table problem was still around. We still got like huge SS tables, and I think to this day they might remain somewhere. Although lots of stuff evolved over this cluster. This cluster right now is the first triple cloud cluster nowadays that we built, and it's running well. So this problem, this name was given by Nate, Gucci hardware, like if you run top of the line hardware. It was never had contact with that. what, and we got one day one ticket saying element not found on reads. This was the java.lang that element not found when we do some reads. And say, okay, let's see what this cluster. So this was the first time, this was a customer that had multiple clusters. So we got some insight into some of them. So we didn't know at the time all of the clusters. And then the first ticket we get is on a brand new cluster we didn't know it existed. And we found out a 180 node cluster on 1.2.17. On-prem, no access whatsoever. It's a financial institution. So there's no way we can SSH into this. But it's running amazing hardware. At the time, dual Fusion I/O cards, but there's almost no data, 200 gigabytes per node. A lot of CPU, 128 gigs of RAM. This thing was an amazing machine. Which is the problem? This thing happened randomly, a couple of times per week. But it means the reads would fail, or will, and they didn't understand why. Did my first thing, okay, look into the code, look into Jira. By the way, upgrade was not an option. All software needs to be validated, all that. No way, so we could work on that. The other thing is this was based in Japan. I'm based in Portugal. So this is 9 hours difference. The sysadmin there was really good, but English was not perfect. So that triggered another problem on communication. And no access again, no kind of access. Over the shoulder had to be planned with a couple of days. So things had to be through tickets. Tickets and emails. And what you will do is like, okay, I need logs for this, and then you have 180 nodes, and then you tons of logs pushed into your email. It's like, okay, this will take like a week just to go through these logs. So we have to figure out, customer is getting nervous, we see this, although not, but we don't want to see any problem. So one of the solutions I proposed was the upgrade. Like, okay, let's try to validate and see if get Cassandra 2.0 being validated internally and try to get an update path and see if this goes away. Although there was no bug field, so I was not really happy with the solution. It's like, okay. And I talked to the community a lot and say, okay, open a ticket. It's a bug. We don't know. So, okay, but for me to open the ticket, I need data. So I need to provide information about the ticket. And the problem was, since it happens randomly, I cannot trigger the bug and say, well, this is the thing. And this was one of the times I also got the sysadmin team from Pichin in and say, guys, if you see something happen, how do you catch that stuff? Well, you ask trace, you do this, you do that, and TCP dumps. And so suddenly a massive amount of command lines were shipped by email to Japan. It's like, hey guys, can you run all these things and send back the data, collect deep dumps and all that. After 1 month, we got lucky. S3 got a race condition. So on the Fusion I/O driver. So it was not related to Cassandra. It was not. It was because they had actually two cards on the boxes, and there was a race condition where when an SS table was flushed, by some reason it could not pick up which card the sync would go, and we'll lose part of the data. It was like so that's why when you read, the data was inconsistent, and Cassandra said, yeah, this is not what I'm expecting. By the way, there was no corruption checking on Cassandra, so you cannot get this one. So we proposed a fix, and the fix was to remove a Fusion I/O card. and it took a month to fix, and that's it. But this one, probably the trickiest one we had to figure it out. So this is our only one and only time we actually had a cluster down that we managed. Full cluster down, all the nodes down. There was no way. So why? We got, again, customer signs in, said, yeah, we got a few problems in Cassandra, blah, 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 we need your help. It's always, if nobody tells it's a huge fire, this is in, people will, no. It's always a small thing. So the first thing we ask him is don't settle, and we do describe clusters. Either, and it's like, I don't know how many schemas were in flight. 12, 18, 20, I just don't like, something really crazy. This is a 40-node cluster in Azure. Nobody likes good hard drives. I don't know why. Spinning disks. A lot of data for those spinning disks. IoT, so this is a energy company collecting all the data from the meters running 3012. And, of course, now applications are always all right. Another thing, if sometimes we get to the DBAs, we can't get to the developers. I don't know why. This is a really a tough fight we have. It's like, okay, get me a developer so I can talk with him, see what they are doing. So while this was happening, we could not know what... and somehow, I don't remember how, we got to say, yeah, applications make schema changes. They have a lot of applications, and they test the development stuff also on the production cluster, which... led to this storm, schema storm. So we said, okay, this is easy. Okay, fine, this is an easy one. Stop allowing applications to do schema changes or make it in a sensible way, like one application at a time. And say, okay, yeah, we'll do that. Communicate to the developers, schemas changes are done on the command line, and by a sysadmin, and it's all fixed. In the meanwhile, of course, we had to restart all the nodes and get all the all that storm fixed. But this was a easy one. So, but yeah, it didn't end there. 3013 was released. Customer loved the bleeding edge. Like, we want to jump right into 3013. Let's upgrade. And actually, the apps also didn't stop doing the schema changes. And one of the apps decided to use materialized views massively. So, amazing. And you know what was really nice? We had this all monitored with... what's that really old monitoring tool, but Nagios. And you know what happened on this day? Nagios crashed. So we started the upgrade. We are not looking into Nagios. We are doing the upgrade. We plan it. And the upgrade went just south. Like, suddenly, so when we looked into the cluster, like, the described cluster would say, so you never should change schema during an upgrade anyway, but somehow they did. Although we sent emails, we advised, everything was there, and then we figured out there was a Cassandra bug, Cassandra 113.559 called. The name that was given to the bug was like schema storm. Amazing. So there's a regression somewhere where the new nodes restarting do not accept the schema, so they send another schema out. And, all things cascade into hell, and we had to shut down the whole cluster. So customer was not happy. There was no solution whatsoever. We did try, but the log files were unreadable because the only thing you see is write is not accepted because the schema is not settled. It's like and at the massive velocity, a wall of... so we had to shut down the whole cluster, shut down all the nodes, restart nodes one by one, rebuild the materialized views. That's another amazing thing because... even with all this, and we said, yeah, guys, you know, all this is all wrong. Yeah, but we need the materialized views. So, and a couple of weeks later, we got the ticket saying, like, data is inconsistent on the materialized views. Like, oh. So, this cluster was actually a journey in hell for the whole team. I think it was 3-4 months of, let's pick something that's really broken and use it, and then open a ticket. And although we build the teams in Pigeon in the follow the sun perspective, like, yeah, I'm in Lisbon, somewhere in US, someone is in India, so we rotate the pager. When things go really bad, yeah, everyone wakes up and everyone needs to join on this. And so one of the things I not miss managed services. So the only cluster that we actually have to shut down. And in the meanwhile, they added Spark to this, so things got really fun with this cluster. Was this one that they opened also a ticket? Why we have 8 times the data on a materialized view that we have on the base table? So it's after this cluster, every time I see materialized view, I always say, disable it first thing. Or we're not getting into it until you disable the materialized views. Even if you say, I understand the problems, no, you don't understand the problems. There's no way you can fix those things. So this was a weird one. Especially because the behavior is intended. This is probably, if not the biggest cluster we manage. 700 nodes, over 3 DCs, Azure attached storage, terabyte per node. The funny thing is, like, 2 DCs in Europe, 1 in China, and people still think that there's no such thing as latency in the links, so which cause all sorts of problems. And it has all kind of flows, this cluster. It's like, whatever, we got into this cluster because materialized views, by the way. So while we joined, it's like, guys, it's Black Friday coming on. This thing is on fire. And we got there. Oh, you have materialized views everywhere. Yeah. We need those. Why? We are moving out of SQL Server, and we need those things. No. So one of those amazing top-down decisions, like, hey, guys, I read about Cassandra. Let's drop SQL Server all into Cassandra. So, they got around it by over-provisioning. That's why they got to 700 nodes. And one day we got this ticket. Actually, my colleague Pedro got this ticket. Abnormal behavior on geodistributions. Like, what? But the good thing is, actually, since all the fires and all the things with these guys, they already provided a ton of information. Also, no access. No access whatsoever. I think maybe 1 or 2 times we got over the shoulder, but yeah, best case was a phone call. Or on site. Like, guys, we have this on fire. Can you come over? It's like, yeah, but we need to plan. Yeah, we can wait. We can keep the fire. Keep the fire going until you guys arrive. But we got this ticket, and of course they immediately dumped a ton of data, which was good. We could figuring out what's going on. So speculative retries were causing a lot of trouble. It's like, okay, we can disable a speculative retries. Well, another thing about this job is people don't follow your recommendations often. It's like you say, do this, and no. It's like, there is no point in keeping speculative retries. Yeah, but we want to have them. Why? Oh, well, we want, okay. It's normal for us to provide recommendations. The first thing, we do L check, we provide recommendations. A couple of months later, they implemented maybe 1 or 2, the critical ones, the rest they ignore. So they were trying a new data model, and actually they picked up a query and it's like, let's see how this query behaves on all data centers. So SQLSH, run that query on all the three data centers, and the behavior was really weird. Sometimes on North Europe, and always weird in China. Like, keeping cascading speculative retries. And it's like, why is that? Why is that? So we did a table histograms, the 99 percentile, which is what triggers the speculative retries, and China had absolutely no traffic. Well, because they figured out that it was a lot of latency. So it's like, yeah, we have the data center there, but we don't use it. So no writes, no reads. So it was 0 milliseconds on whatever percentile. So whatever query you do, it always violates the 95%, the 99 percentile. It's always slower than zero. So it triggers a cascade of speculative retries. And for this specific table, as you see, it's all but amazing. 318 milliseconds of the query. If I could, I'd show the query. It's like, it's a massive query, getting all type of filtering in there. And in North Europe, they had a little bit load, but it sometimes will violate those 61 and will trigger those. Well, we digged into it and we figured out, well, this is supposed to be. And, well, you have to tell the customer that, yeah, that's how it goes. So, system out will always, and it's not changeable. You cannot change the percentile on the speculative retry percentile on system out. That's it. It's so, how do we fix this? Well, increase the role's validity. So at least you decrease the amount of times that you need to check for the roles. And another thing was, yeah, remove the DC. If you're not using the DC, remove it. They ended up actually removing the DC, which was later on. But they increased the nodes on the other DCs. This is one of those things that you tell something to the customer and you regret it. Even if it's only on an informal talk, like I was there on site. Well, you've seen this cluster, right? So, same guys, they had a problem. Loads was, some part of the load was because of heavy connection handling. They had tons of connections. So I was one day on site, and I said something like, there's this thing called coordinator nodes. But that was it. I'm honest. That was all I said. It's like, you can, there was a talk by someone at a conference that you can do this thing called coordinator nodes, but that might help on reducing load. I swear, I didn't say anything else. Like, we should plan on it. We should, because I think, okay, they will not try anything. Well, they found the talk. They figured out driver need to be changed. And 2 weeks later, we got an email saying, yeah, great, amazing idea. We did it. The load is dropped amazingly. It's like, yeah, so much harder going to the cost reduction will be amazing. A couple of days later, 3 days later, it's like, yeah, the date, the coordinator nodes are, the date is not be found. Any application that uses the coordinator nodes, well, we can't read the data. It's like, okay, so I went on site. And they say, no, everything is fine. We did the coordinator nodes. They showed me those things running and all that, and they're handling stuff. So what happened? One of the things with coordinator nodes is you need to whitelist the nodes. You cannot connect to the actual cluster. So the nodes live outside of your cluster, and they just do connection management. And then the nodes in the back just do data. But for that, the driver needs to be changed. This is not a default behavior. Well, so they rewrote the connection management part of the C# driver, which is good, but that thing was giving a lot of errors. They got something wrong. And so they killed the error reporting on the driver. Which problem solved. So I got hold of a few tests they did, and which still logging. And yeah, the logging was like, yeah, I'm not making any connection. So the assumption they had is like, they are not making any connection because it's not connecting to the cluster, it's connecting to the coordinators. Now they are not connecting anywhere. So in the end they say, okay, but where is the data? Well, it's gone. There's nowhere your data. So don't do coordinator nodes. That's, and I'm not never mentioning this again. So it was also those Pedro suffered on the talks because of the lost data. The best part was like, Carlos, did you tell me anything about coordinator nodes? Like, I might say something. So this one was again. All this thing is nice. We have a couple of problems here and there. It's, and when we logged in, it was a weird, unstable cluster. Like, all sorts of weird stuff was happening. GC pauses here and there. A lot of load and no load. Mutations dropped. Repairs crashing. Well, repairs crashing was kind of normal at that time. But it was actually decent hardware. 6 nodes for the load they had, which was apparently barely none. SSD is a single DC, late 2.1, so things were pretty stable. I asked where they host the data. It was some local cloud company. The partition scheme seemed okay. The access pattern, well, that seemed really random-ish. It's like, so we had those things, okay, what's happening here? So this was a company managing a cluster for another company that called us. So again, like, so lots of layers to figure out what's going on. And we said, okay, no, guys, you have to tell us what's going on here. Like, we do all L-check, we change our small configuration, but this is weird. Stuff happens on weird ways in random times. So we digged into the problem, it was cows. So this is a company that was tracking cows, around 1 million cows in Texas. So I actually tried to figure out how many cows do we have in Portugal, and we have less than 1 million. This was one company in Texas alone. They explained to me there's something with federal land and you can use stuff, the land and whatever. So they put some posts around like every some kilometers, and the cows have a collar, and when they get near those things, they send all the biometric data about the cows. They could figure out if a cow was giving birth and all that, tracking diseased cows. In some places you have more poles than others. So cows might not be visible. Cows might be visible into several ones, and you get a lot of duplicate data. That would kind of explain the load pattern. And then we also had the problem was when they feed the cows, that was the random event that normally would crash the cluster, because near the feeding points, they actually have like, okay, so it's somewhere near a road or whatever, so they put several of those poles, so you see if huge amount of cows going into the feeding thing at given times, and then the cluster that barely had any events, and sometimes I think at one point they were visible to 24 things, and you get 24 million inserts in a really short amount of time. But even okay, so we put the queue in front, yeah, that helps, and that, but still get some problems like. The cluster was always resource-starved, even with good hardware and configuration. So with all that, we set up monitoring. Patrick told me op center was good at that time, so I put op center in. It helped. I got this picture. So the brown one is CPU still. So, yeah. So all the machines on this local cloud provider was way over provisioned. So once one machine picks up CPU, all the other ones don't have CPU anymore. So that was nice. So, okay. How do we move? Well, we move into a different provider. That fixed a lot of problems, actually. Networking, because they said they had like 1 gig links and nothing around that. And of course, we put also a lot of small fixes. And in the end, like all the cows got tracked perfectly fine and was actually a really nice project in the end. And this was probably the weirdest Cassandra stuff I've seen, like tracking cows with Cassandra. And that's it. I had one more, but there's so much into hardware that was the weirdest one we had. So if someone knows why disk 6, 12, 18, and 24 of a server will die, and no other disk. But this is, like I said, it's Cassandra was running there, RAID 0. I didn't know I had time for that, so I didn't put it in. But yeah, firmware issues on Samsung SSDs, because the cable of the RAID controller, the 6, 12, 1824 was 2 millimeters longer. It took Samsung to take a server to Korea to actually figuring out they had a firmware bug, which the only way to solve it was flashing the SSDs, wipe it out. It was a funny one. So we only flashed a couple. And we moved to RAID 10. So, any questions? It's more about stories, so not, I didn't expect, but...
Was one of these stories from a company from Poland?
No. It's not a Polish company. I think it's half-half, a couple of Europeans, but no Polish companies. You've seen some weird stuff as well, yeah. No.
Who in here that
works with Cassandra has never seen anything weird? Yeah, alright. Can you go back to the slide on the speculative
retry
problem?
Yeah. This one.
The next one. The solution. So, you increase the rollability in milliseconds?
Yeah.
How did that help?
Because you need to check the rolls less times. It doesn't solve it in any way, but it alleviates the problem. That's it. That's not a fix. And the thing is, it's never going... If you go to Jira, it's not a problem, so I don't think they will change that. It's reported. Or other thing is, keep your old data centers busy. That's another. If you have several data centers, keep them busy. It's also a good
cost savings.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks all.